So welcome everybody to the Friday Night Inner Space talk. The title for tonight's talk is Sharpen Your Creativity in Adversity. Joining us from Canada is Eric. Eric's been a journalist and producer for news and current affair programs for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for over 30 years. Based in Montreal, he coordinates our meditation centers through Canada. And tonight, Eric's going to be sharing his insights on how to turn adversity into an advantage, how to stop information overload so that there's space for your creativity, what to do with creative blocks that occur, and basically, sharpening your creativity in adversity. So, Eric, I'm going to hand over to you. Thank you very much, and I'll be joining you all for the questions and answers. Please do send your questions and to the question and answer link, and I will be putting those forward to Eric. Thank you.
Well, Artie, thank you very much. And for those who have been listening to our chit chat for the past 10, 15 minutes, I guarantee you it's not going to be a kind of talk on tennis only. So, greetings to everyone. And I've been a Zoom user for quite a few months now, extensively, and it has its beauty. And I really would like to invite you for the first minute to connect together. In a just yes, with Zoom. I'm here in Montreal in this amazing city in Canada. And I don't know who I'm speaking to at the moment, but I believe that minds can connect together. Hearts can connect together as well. We just need time, when I connect my Bluetooth device here with my speakers, takes a few seconds to make the connection. So I'd just like to invite you for just one little minute of quiet silence. And what I'm going to do for me is just feel your presence. I don't see your bodies. I don't see your images. You have the advantage of seeing mine, but I don't see yours. But I'll be trying to feel how we connect on a mental level. And I believe that I, as an individual, create waves, a frequency in my consciousness. Words are words, but ideas are, doors to consciousness, right? So when we listen, when we feel, it opens up the heart, it opens up the consciousness. So let's go for just half a minute into a moment of silence to create that connection between all of us. All right, so your spiritual Bluetooth is on, so we can connect on a deeper level than just Zoom. Zoom is actually a word I like very much because I use it at work all the time. My background is in media. I work as a journalist and producer for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I've been there for over 30 years now. And at the same time as I became a journalist, I also turn into a kind of apprentice yogi, a young yogi. And my life has always been a combination of both. I've always found that both were complementary to each other. How spirituality helped me a lot to be in a world where media is not known to be a very positive environment, could be a very toxic environment. And I work in newsroom, I worked in all kind of different stories, I covered awful events, shootings, murders, things that, are really disturbing when you think of the human species. And but I also did amazing documentaries and stories, very uplifting, very inspiring. And if I didn't have my spirituality, I think I may have lost some of the purpose, some of the values that helped me in my work. But at the same time, I find that without my work, my spirituality could have been a little bit hairy-fairy sometimes. I'm a Cancer in my astrological sign, tend to dream a lot. I love to dream. Creativity has never been a problem for me. Tend to have more than I need, actually. But also spirituality can be a little bit, just going up in the clouds and getting lost somewhere in your clouds. So going to work every day in such a intense environment has always been very, very helpful for me to maintain that balance. And so in television, we use this word Zoom, and it has the beauty of telling you how close do you go from your subject. You zoom in or you zoom out. And I teach part of my work at the moment for quite actually a few years has been also to teach storytelling. And I have this great privilege to talk to a lot of my colleagues from all different fields in the media, cameramen, editors, journalists, producers, all of them. And my role is to take them through the process of how storytelling works. And the first part of the course is about creativity. This topic came because we did an interview with a great mind, a philosopher. And he said, you know, it was about this coronavirus, the COVID. And he said, you know, one thing that has been proved is that in terms of adversity, creativity tends to be at its peak. People tend to be very creative when there is adversity. And I find it very, very interesting. So that's why I suggested to Arti we could take that up as a topic. And you know, creativity has many, many different aspects. And then I know time will fly and I'll be joking around, and before I know it will be time to say goodbye. But creativity has so many aspects, which we may not cover all of them. But there's creativity in surviving. You know, sometimes it's hard to get out of a situation which is difficult. Well, creative people will also be very useful to find a way out sometimes of a very difficult situation. Creativity could be, of course, for the arts, expressing beauty, reaching another part of the consciousness of people by surprising them, by showing an angle that nobody saw before, something that they never heard before, or in a way that wasn't been used before. So creativity in the arts is extremely important. Creativity in science. You know, most of the scientific discoveries are coming from people thinking out of the box. That's usually what happens. Creativity in storytelling, of course. One exercise that we do and for the training, it's very interesting, and you may want to play the game in your mind at the moment, but knowing the context, you'll be already picking up on what I want to do. Usually the first session, when people walk in the room, we'll let them settle in. And then one of the first thing I ask people to do, like a surprise, I tell them, take a pen and paper and please make draw the picture of a dog. And I say, okay. So yeah, just quickly, you have 2 minutes, draw a dog, you know, make a little drawing of a dog. And okay, people take their pen and paper. I have one here, and I'll draw a dog. And so the beautiful dog, you'll see, it's very nice. And so people do a dog. And then of course, they're concerned that their drawing may not be good. And voila, listen. And then what I do is that usually I write on the board, if there's 12 people in a room, or let's say there are 20 people in a room, I would count how many people are left-handed, how many are right-handed. And I will write on the board something like for 20 people, and I may write, I don't know, something like 16, 3, and 1. And then I will ask them, can you show me your dog? How did you draw your dog? So most people will show me something like this, right? It's very not very well drawn, but I did it in 2 seconds. So most people would do the dog exactly like that. And when I count, very often, I'm almost there, you know, like sometimes it's 15 or whatever, but there will be maybe 16 dogs all exactly like that. going the same way, the head on the right, on the left, profile. And then one or two or three will go the other way if they are left-handed. And one will usually draw something a little bit different, dog from the face, you know, seeing the dog from face. Why everybody draws a dog on a profile? You know, it's easier. And the point is, if you ask 20 people to do something, most likely all of them will do about the same thing. And that shows that in 20 people, taken a little bit by surprise on something, most likely there's only one creative person out of 20. And it's actually the ratio. We find that most people are actually not very creative. They can be if asked to be creative. But naturally, we tend to go into what is secure, you know, what is known, what is reassuring, what is, okay, if I'm asked to do something as, you know, all of a sudden, instead of taking a risk, I probably will go into something I know how to do properly. And if you ask 20 people after that, telling them, you know, your dog is pretty boring. I mean, there's no originality. And I won't go again into all the details because this is more like a professional or mundane approach to creativity. But it's fascinating what we do with just that little exercise. And then I show them how, you know, in the news, if something happened today in Montreal, 10 journalists will run to the event. They will all go back to their station, newspaper, radio, television. Out of 10, 9 will do the same story. You'll have the victim, you'll have the police officer, you'll have this, you'll have that. Pictures will be almost the same. They will change, you know, they will have one neighbor, the other one will have another neighbor, but basically same structure, same stories. So in journalism, we say, you're very predictable and it's very boring. You know, that's why people stop watching news. It's predictable. We know every night what will happen. Bad news, bad news, bad news. International bad news, bad news. Oh, sport, who won? A bit of weather forecast, bye-bye, good night. You know, every day is the same. Now we tell journalists, why would you not be a bit more creative? So we tell them now, can you draw a dog being creative? Show me a dog, but not just the way you all did that dog right away. So people go back to their little paper and pen. And then what you see is 20 crazy pictures of things very funny, you know, and people will draw, I don't know, a dog flying or a point, and they say, that's my dog when I see it from the moon, for example. And creativity is just a muscle that we're not using all the time. And it could have just a very mundane application, like drawing or this like that. I don't know if in English it's known, but there's a story extremely well known by a French writer, and it's called The Little Prince. A very, very well known international story. Apparently, with the Bible, is the number one bestseller for the last, I don't know how many decades. And it's always in the first 10 bestsellers every year, still, The Little Prince. And if you know that story, the little prince coming from another planet falls on the earth, and he sees a pilot who is with his plane in the desert, stuck and trying to fix his plane. So he's very busy with his mind. And the little prince comes to him and he says, please, can you draw me a picture of a sheep, right? It's a mouton, a sheep. He says, can you please draw me a picture of a sheep? And I said, why? Where do you want a sheep being drawn? And I'm busy, I don't have time. And then the little prince insists, draw me the picture of a sheep. And you remember what is the story? That's the beginning of the book, by the way. A great way of storytelling. And the man gets a little bit annoyed. So what does he do? He creates a box. And he says, listen, this is a box. And the sheep that you want is in the box. That is highly creative. In spirituality, we say, please tell me about the soul. And we say, well, that's a complicated one. How do you draw a soul? And spirituality will say, well, I'm drawing you a body. And I'm saying, this is a body. The soul you're looking for is inside. Same story. So you'll find that if we start to explore the dimension of creativity, we're touching what, basically? We're touching the ability to think differently from how we think normally and to see things we don't see. I'm sure you've seen on Facebook and social media a lot of these pictures where they ask you, stare at the picture for a few seconds, what do you see? They're just the regular mind will always try to do the same thing. If they show numbers and they say, can you find out what's the mistake in those numbers? Everybody makes the same mistake. They add the number, they subtract, they multiply. Everybody does the same thing. And one out of 20, usually things out of the box. So why I find this topic to be interesting is because learning in spirituality is, of course, a foundation to grow. If I want to become a better person, if I want to change myself, if I want to be better in my way of handling situation, I need to learn. But we haven't been told, I think, clearly that learning is much easier and much more efficient if we use creativity. They would say, for example, in our business, that a picture is worth 1,000 words. People will learn more through stories than from data, from information. You can bombard, that's the expression we use, you can bombard, you can shoot people with ideas. The only thing you're going to make is a hole in their consciousness. Tell them a story and they will remember the story. So how are we learning about life? How are we going through life in general? If I'm stuck in a situation, let's say something very practical, your parent and your child is young, maybe 10, 12 years old, and he's really a story of his own, and he's giving you a little bit of a trouble and it's driving you crazy, basically. So what are you going to do? Most likely you'll do like most parents. You'll talk about it to school, maybe with a psychologist, with a social person, you'll read about in books. How about being creative? How about trying to be thinking out of the box? This is how we define creativity often. Think out of the box. It's very challenging. It's very, very challenging, particularly when there is an emotion attached to the situation. If there's fear, if there is doubts, if there's anger, if there's hatred, if there is peacelessness, at that time, to think outside of the box is very, very difficult. And that's where I find that we need to give the mind a chance to be creative. You have to, what do we do when we do creative brainstorms professionally? You put people in a room and you provoke them with something totally different from what they would normally be exposed to. You would give them costumes, sometimes you give them objects that they have to identify with, a monkey, a cow, a pig, and something, and say, well, now this is you. You change the parameters of their normal settings. And suddenly you see very sometimes serious people becoming very funny. And you see people who you thought were actually boring to be quite creative. You don't know who is the most creative person until you poke at them a little bit and challenge them and see if their creativity can be interesting. We usually say that creative people are very curious. They ask questions. They're not afraid of being make fun of, you know, they're not afraid of being the looking stupid. They don't mind. Humble people can be more creative. Strange, eh? Arrogant people will be very attached to their ideas, and they will limit themselves to what others may think of their ideas. So they don't want to look not smart, not good, whatever. So humble people can be actually very, very creative. Non-creative people are quite stubborn. They think they are right most of the time. they are not curious about knowing what other person think. They're not willing to take big risks. They like knowing in advance that, you know, things will be safe and I won't make a fool of myself. That's the expression I was looking at, and not being afraid of making a fool of myself. So creativity is an art, I would say, but it's also just a muscle. And if we, you know, use that muscle of creativity in many different ways, it could be whilst cooking, could be in relationships, could be in my way of educating my child, but it could be in meditating, in thinking of myself, in dealing with myself, what I'm going through in my life. And I find that creativity is almost like the breath of moving forward. Progress can be labor if it's done just the right way, because that's the way I was told. Progressing could be pleasure if it's creative, because it's fun, it's new, it's different. It's like, oh, I'm interested. I mean, I know some films are so good, you may watch them 10 times and you still enjoy them. But usually a film, when you've seen it once, you're losing a little bit, you know, the surprise effect is less there. So it's good the first time, and afterwards only really special films, you might want to see them again, you know, a few years later. Newness is always something that will, you know, pull your energy up because, oh, it's interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. So I'm just giving you my personal, relationship with creativity in a way. But now I'd like to really bring it to the experience that we have in sailing through adversity. Because when there is adversity, we're confronted not really with outside, because this is a big, big mistake we make, is we think that the adversity comes from outside. This COVID situation, it's a worldwide situation. Now, we know that everybody reacts in different ways. The virus is the same, the pandemic is the same, most of the countries in the world are going through similar scenarios, confinement, restriction, wearing the mask, you know, threats of people dying, other people rejecting measures and becoming anti-mask and anti this and the other. Most countries go through the same thing. What about me individually? Am I learning through this situation? I'm inviting you just to check, how did you do for the past 5 months? What has been the process in yourself in the last few months? Have you been watching outside imposing upon you a reality? Or have you been aware at some point of what is my reality able to change on my outside external situation? And it's a very powerful concept I find in spirituality. And for me, this has been my driving force, I would say, in continuing, because it's quite difficult, you know, to be spiritual most of the time, or to be Zen, cool, peaceful, positive. I don't know about you, but for me, it's been interesting journey. We do our best, but learning experience. But what keeps me going is this ability to learn something new and to see new dimensions. Again, in my tennis lesson just a few days ago, the teacher told me, you know, Eric, you're doing what most people do in tennis. You're running very fast to be in the right position when the ball comes to you. And he says, this is a big mistake. So what do you mean? I mean, I've been told that it's good when you're in tennis, you have to run really fast. And no, your aim should be to go to the ball as slowly as possible. I said, what? I said, yeah, you have to save your energy. And so the aim is to know how to reach the right place at the right time and to hit the ball properly. And you can do it whilst being in a movement. You don't need to reach there 3 seconds before the ball arrives so you can hit it properly. He says, you can do that, but you're going to be exhausted after a short time, like you are at the moment. And I never heard that before. And he said, your effort as to go slower, not faster. And to me, it was like, wow, this is a big revolution. I know I'm not good in tennis, but maybe I'll get a little bit better with that little tip. And it was a new, I mean, I've been playing tennis for 30 years, and I know I'm a hopeless case, I think, but I pay him well, so for he doesn't tell me that, so he can have an income. But I felt that was a new trick and a new skill that I wanted to develop as well, to say, oh yeah, slow down. And you know, for hitting the ball, we tend to think that we need muscles and strength. It's the opposite. If you look at most tennis players, they have very slim arms. It's not at all about muscle. It's on the opposite. It's about being very loose, very easy, very relaxed. And I think that in spirituality, it's about the same thing. You know, it's knowing that it's not what's happening which is making me feel how I feel. It's how I feel that makes me see what's happening as what I think is happening. But if I change how I feel, my perception of what's happening is going to change. And what I think is bad might be perceived as actually not so bad, maybe actually a good thing. I'm not saying for this COVID, it's a good thing. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that in many situations I'm going through, adversity may not be as adversity as I think it is, because it is mean for me to learn, to grow, to change, to become bigger, to become better. If I see it that way, it's different. And the purpose is how to go through the challenges of life in such a way that I don't suffer from what's happening. I don't know if you follow me. It's a challenge of life, is how to go through things in life without necessary suffering because of what's happening. If I can grow and learn and enjoy, even when there's adversity, I'm the winner. Yesterday when I played and I felt that after half an hour, everything went wrong and I lost. I mean, I played twice with this good friend and he won the two games. My aim was keeping the mind positive all the time. Doesn't matter. It's not about the points. It's about what's happening here. And I was very happy at the end of the hour. Even if I lost badly, I left the tennis court happy. It was fun. It was great. It was positive. And I told my friend who played very well. It's not, you know, and I know how many times I left a tennis court in the past, frustrated and thinking, oh, I think I'm going to change sport. I shouldn't play that anymore. I'm never going to be good enough. What's the point? I'm paying for a court. I'm paying a teacher. I'm giving time. I'm putting my body through it. And then I'm not happy. Well, then do something else. Don't play tennis. And now I realize the same scenario. And I can be very happy. So life has been to me a big, big teacher. And I'll give you one other example. Now we're going deeper into real, real thing on spirituality. One area for me, which I find fascinating is, you know, we're told that we should love everybody. We should be kind to people. We should have, you know, good feeling for people in general, even if they're not likable. And I was reflecting on how some people in my life have been sometimes, yes, annoying me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that as a yogi, but yeah, they were bothering me. And some people were, you know, I had to be with them at work or, you know, certain environments. I'm having to be with them, but I don't like them really, really, to be honest. And then I thought about it and I thought, and what am I going to do? Is this just being called normal? And that will be the dog, you know, like everybody else. A relationship is not very pleasant. So therefore, what do you do? You call your friends and you say, oh, do you know this one? What she said again yesterday? You know this one, what he told me, always something. Then we complain. We keep complaining, criticizing. All right, we're normal. That's what people do. But then we suffer every time we are with these people. We're not very, very happy, really. Or we tend to go away or to close ourselves. I'm talking about relationships that are there, you know, you just can't escape them all the time. And then I thought, this is not good for a yogi. You know, yogis are not supposed to behave like that. I'm supposed to have love for these people, but I don't. What helped me was my creativity. I knew the rules. I knew the theory. I read the scriptures and the big talk from big people. I know, love people. I know. Why you don't have love? Maybe you don't have love for yourself. Oh, okay, I heard that. All the therapies, we've done them all. But still, I'm confronted with people that push my buttons, and I don't like that. So then I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to clear that up. I'm going to sort it out. And I started to play with my head, and I had to invent new ways of thinking. Not stupid thinking, but new ways of thinking based on spirituality, on wisdom, but create my own recipe. Go out of the box, look at how I think, and realizing why I don't like them. What's wrong with me? Why is it that I'm reacting? And I realized it's nothing about them. It was only about me. And my lesson at the time was about my selfishness. If somebody doesn't give me a little buzz, after a while, there's no interest. And more than that, if not only they don't give me a buzz, but they do the opposite and they annoy me a little bit because of their personality, their choice of what they do or what they say to me, or how they make my life more complicated because of their doings and skills or whatever, I realize, well, it's just about selfishness. I'm just calibrating. I'm evaluating the interest in a person by how much they fulfill my needs. And at the moment they are not fulfilling my needs, I don't like them so much. And that's why we always say it's so easy to love people we love and so difficult to love people we don't love. And most people won't bother. They don't try to love people they don't love. They take it for granted. It's human. That's how we are. My point was, if I don't love people, I'm the one unhappy. The other person doesn't even know I don't appreciate them fully because I'm very polite, very kind. Hello, nice to see you. Not true. Nice to see you. Not true. I was like that at some point. And now I decided, no, let's clear it up. Go to the core. Why is it that I'm not happy with these people and why I'm not able to love them? And I started to create exercises, games in my mind. I started to play in my head with some people. And I decided to, for example, I made a list of a few people that really were, mostly they were at work, to be honest with you. And they were kind of bugging me a little bit. And I put a list and I decided to start to dig into these people to find what really are their qualities. If they are so high ranked, for example, at the company, they must have some skills. Then I looked at most of them because most of them are parents. And I was visualizing this guy that I don't like too much. When he goes home in the evening, maybe, and I knew maybe this one has two boys, young boys, maybe those two young boys, when they see this man coming in the evening, they run, they jump in his arm and say, "Daddy, daddy, you're home, you're home." So I started to feel different things. To me, this is creativity. I mean, I'm not following a therapy given by a psychologist. It was my own creativity. And I started to play with how I see other people. And I started to try creating in my mind a set of values and qualities in people that I met. And I tried to repeat those every time I would see this person. I would say, no, this one, actually, he's very honest. He's very, very honest. And he usually says what is on his mind. And I started to create a little mantra or a little paragraph of good thoughts for the person. And I can swear to you, I never talked to most of these people. Not that there were many, but there were a few. I never talked to them about it, but I noticed a change. And after a while, I saw that they were responding to me a little bit differently. I was not vibrating. My vibration was not anymore. Externally, I'm polite and I'm putting a mask, a masquerade of, I like you, you're okay, hello, nice to see you. But I could feel that the vibration behind, even though I thought it's not visible, it's like you went playing sport maybe and you smell a bit funny and you don't know your smell, but people would tell you, maybe you should go and take a shower. You don't smell your smell, but other people do. Same with your vibration. We don't know our vibrations, but other people pick them up. And by changing those vibrations, I'm amazed how they started also to react differently or to have a different attitude towards me. And honestly with you, today I can say really, really, there's nobody in my life I don't have good feelings for. Nobody. There's nobody. I tried everybody, even big head of states near Montreal, you know, down south. I tried to maintain an attitude where even people on earth that do terrible things, I try not to allow that person to generate a negative feeling in me. I'm not responsible and I can't control what the other person is doing and who they are, but I can control and be responsible for how I feel about them. And I really believe that my duty on a spiritual level for a person who wants to have a spiritual journey, my duty is to give love and give respect and give regard and give at least, you know, a positive energy, maybe compassion, mercy, pity. Doesn't matter what the feeling will be, but let it be a feeling which is benevolent, which comes from a clean heart, from a very okay heart. And I find that to reach to these kind of efforts on my spiritual journey, I think creativity was very helpful, very, very helpful. I'm enjoying trying different things in different ways in my thinking, in my learning skills. The other day, you know, I sat, have you ever done that? You know, think of where you sit in your apartment or in your house. And I'm sure you'll find a place where you never sit. Might be on the bench at the entrance with your shoes, could be somewhere else. And I know some of you might think I'm a bit crazy, but it's okay, that's fine. But one day I decided to see if I'm going to change my perspective of where I live. And I started sitting in the kind of hallway where I never sit. And I started to feel, it's interesting. This is my apartment. I live here for almost 20 years. I never sat right here for more than a second, you know, just sit there and see my apartment from that perspective. Try that. It's fascinating. You know, it's like you rediscover a part of your apartment that you never spend time on. Put a chair somewhere and start reading a book in a very odd place in your apartment. I mean, that is creativity. It's just to trigger something different. You know, creativity, as I mentioned in the beginning, is just opening the door to new ideas, new thoughts that we didn't know, we didn't think about before. And they were there all the time. Creativity is always about seeing an invisible thing that was visible for someone else, but not to me. So it's a fascinating dynamic, and it's probably one of the rare kind of quality, if we want, or skill, which we don't associate with spirituality. But I think being creative could also be, on a spiritual level, highly, highly efficient. So I don't know about time. Artie, tell me if we are doing okay. I don't want you all to be asleep in front of your Zoom computer. And I don't see you, but I hope that you are in a good spirit. And I think, I hope some of you are smiling. Are you?
Definitely. Hopefully. Definitely. Thank
some
you.
Of you are smiling. Some might be thinking of going to play tennis soon. Fine. If you're living in Montreal, I'll tell you the name of my teacher. He's number one. And if not, I'll tell you when Federer is playing. 2021, he's resting for now. So I don't know, Artie, if we have any questions or if you want me to answer a few thoughts.
So we do have a few questions, but firstly, could we have a short meditation and then go from there?
How about I try a creative meditation?
Sounds lovely.
All right, so let's go into creative space in a form of a meditation. So just take 1 second to realign your body a little bit. If you've been sitting like me for a while, then just give a signal to your body to be alert, not asleep. I invite you to maybe even keep your eyes open. Just so that we know where you are, it's fine. And you fix somewhere. You can watch me on the screen, or you can just watch some other part near you, a flower, a candle, whatever. And you let your eyes become a little bit at rest, you know, just like the muscle is relaxed. So you're very, very relaxed physically. Take a deep breath, just to feel that we are cleaning the body as much as we can, depending where you are with the air. But take a deep breath and feel how this air helps this air to circulate in the body, to give oxygen to the blood. And with just a few thoughts, we direct the energy of the mind in making the body very relaxed, very, very peaceful. Then we become aware that in between thoughts, there is silence. So we can think, but very slowly. Just start to see this tiny little space between thoughts. And now you realize that even though your eyes may be open, you can look at the screen of your mind. Let's imagine that on the screen of the mind, we see a beautiful little river, tiny little river, but beautiful. Just imagine fresh water flowing in the river. You can actually hear the sound of the water. You can see the reflection of the sun. The water is sparkling like there are so many jewels in it. There's the sun on the water. You can see very green, beautiful herbs and plants on the shore of the river. You can even see some flowers. And now just imagine that you're putting your hand in the water of the river. Just visualize your hand going into this very clear, pure, transparent water. You can feel the water through your fingers and feel how fresh and cool it is. Can you see your hand? Can you see the river? Can you see the beauty of nature? And then this amazing thought comes to the mind that this is also my inner world. And in my mind is this beautiful flow of pure, fresh thoughts. It's the river of my mind. And this hand is my awareness. I just see how I can put my hand into my mind, being aware of my thoughts and making that inner world as beautiful as a river. And I want to keep my mind clear, clean, pure. It's like my inner sanctuary. I can be responsible for that mind. I can decide to go into the beauty of the mind every day. Enjoy the freshness of my thoughts and remind myself that my inner world can be as beautiful as nature when it reveals all its beauty. And I can create in my own mind the beauty of the self.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. Everyone is by the river. We didn't lose anyone in the water. Nobody drowned.
No, I think you all enjoyed that. That was really beautiful.
Can you all see your hands? Can you see the water? It's beautiful. I don't know. I never don't do that too often, but I could feel myself almost my hand being cold in the water. It's lovely.
Wow. Thank you. All right. Let me pose some of the questions that have come in. How do we teach creativity step by step in the face of negativity?
Do I answer one by one?
Let me do that.
Well, I think that the first thing is to take people away from the negativity for just a moment, to go into another space where creativity will happen. Because I don't think that it's easy to be facing a negativity or adversity or struggle or trauma. And in that state of connecting with the trauma, to tell a person, now be creative. So we have to create a space where we're going to allow the mind to be open to creativity. So the first thing I would do is not to take the problem as a start, but to propose the person to go into something completely different. And so my suggestion would be to start with stories, to tell the person a story. That would take the mind away from its own personal problem, and it will, you know, open the space of imagination, the imaginary skills of the mind, the fantasy that we can explore. So first, I would say, put the mind outside of the problem. So it is a little bit breathing for an aspect of creativity. Then I would, as another step, I would ask the person, what would be really something for you that you would want at the moment? Is it more peace or happiness? Is it more strength? Is it more security? What really is the value that you would want to experience and that you feel would be the most important? Because going through the same adversity, not everyone has the same need. Some people in water have a lot of fear of drowning. Other people in water, it's not the fear of drowning that is there. It's more the idea of not knowing where to, how to navigate, how to go somewhere, how to control it. So in front of same adversity, we shouldn't take for granted that in a certain situation, the person will face fear. It may not be fear, maybe something else, maybe lack of confidence. So first identify what's the value we want to focus on. And then after that, I would start with some creative steps of visualization, playing with visual, like I did with the dog. And so creativity means, for example, okay, if you want patience, find me 10 different pictures that identify or that makes you relate to as being an illustration of patience. If there's a flower, well, I realize there's a flower called patience, right? In French, it's called patience, those little blue ones. So what would be, do you know an animal which is very patient? What will be the form of the clouds that evokes patience for you? So I would play with the visual element. As much as possible in the first steps, we go away from the emotional and the rational. So we go into the imaginary. And then slowly, when we identify the virtue, the quality, the strength, whatever the skill that we want to focus on, we play with the visual, we play with some ideas, and then we reconnect with our emotions. What does this evokes for you in terms of your emotion? How do you feel about this? Now, how do you understand this to be connected to the value that you want? And then you ask them, can you be like this in your life? If you told me, for example, that the sunflower is the flower that illustrates for you happiness, I would say, how? What do you feel, you know, in front of a sunflower? And, you know, why is it a flower for happiness for you? And then, of course, ideas will come. And then I would say, how can you be a sunflower in your life? In the adversity now that we're going to address, I would bring them back to the adversity, but at the not in the beginning of the process, halfway through towards the third of the process, then I would confront the adversity. And that's more like the, of course, spiritual approach. It's not what I do at work. It's more how I do it for myself and how I would work with some people. You know, we do, I was asked one day to do an exercise, which is incredible. It was in when I was in London, actually. A pianist that was a good friend of mine at the time. And he told me, find in yourself six personalities that you have in you, but give them a very specific name. Look at your life and see how you are holding different personalities. And for me, there was, for example, a left behind brother. My sister forgot me one day in a party. She was supposed to take me back home. And I was the, I don't know how to call it in English, but I was supposed to, you know, report to my mom if my sister was behaving well. So she was not happy. She took me to the party, but she forgot me at the party. I was young. I was, I don't know, 12, maybe something like that. And I was very traumatized with this. And then a few other times, I was sometimes left behind by some older people. So I feel I developed in myself the syndrome of a left behind brother. So there was other characters. I've always been fascinated by a baron, nobility. And he said, put those characters in a stage. Make a drawing like I did with the dog. He says, put a stage, put your characters on the stage. See what happened. And it was fascinating to discover my six personalities, give them a name, put them on a stage. And after that, he says, you see, it's saying so much about you. My left behind brother, he was not on the stage. He was actually, he fell off from the stage. My spiritual identity was on the roof. And he said, you know, being you, I would reconsider your understanding of spirituality. It's not being on the roof. But I put my spiritual person on the roof of the stage. And the exercise in creativity was now, imagine another way to put your six characters together on a stage so they can work together. And, you know, it was creative, very, very creative experience. But it made me realize so many things, that we tend to isolate our characters. And if I feel abandoned, and if I feel rejected, and if I feel not good enough, I tend to isolate myself. And I realized that was true. And at that time, maybe my spiritual should step down from the roof and talk to the little left behind brother. And maybe the baron needs to tell the little left behind one, hey, you're not alone. So it was that kind of creativity that I found extremely powerful. And but it didn't start by telling me, now, what's your problem? No, my problem was I wasn't whole. I wasn't complete with myself. I was scattered. I was unclear about who I am. But it took me through the journey of this creative process. It was fascinating.
Wow, thank you. That was very interesting. It's an exercise I know I've done, so I think I will retry that exercise and see where it takes me now.
I did it in 1 minute, but it's actually a longer process, so you can call me for that.
All right. This actually is something you will have lots of insight on, because your work to a degree is actually, a large degree, is very creative, and you use a lot of technology. And the person who's asking this question is asking, saying that their creativity is hindered by all the technology that's available. So how to keep your creativity while using technology without it getting in the way?
Right. Well, I think it's to keep a balance between who is really creative. Is it a machine or is it me? And, you know, it's true. But I remember being in the media 30 years ago, and we had DOS systems in the computer, if you remember. And I wasn't skilled at all in technology. So I had a friend. She had one of the first Mac, the Apple computer, a long time ago. You know, remember those little funny ones? And I had to rely entirely on other people to express my creativity. At CBC, I work as a producer, but I'm not a very good technician. And I've always worked with highly talented cameramen and highly talented editors. So I rely on these people to express my creativity. And I find, yeah, technology is true. It's extremely helpful to be creative. But deep within, I think it still remains a question of the heart and a question of the mind. It's how much my mind can be creative is based on my curiosity, my ability to remain young in my heart, in my mind, to be curious, the values that generate creativity are not technical, you know, curiosity. As I mentioned earlier, humility. Why humility is because it's the ability to see something in other people, which might be inspiring better than what I do. It takes humility to do that. So the values at the core are the most important ones. So I would suggest that to make sure the technology doesn't come in the way is to double check, is my creativity driven by some human values or spiritual values, curiosity, humility, innocence, search of truth, search of beauty, ability to be amazed, you know. Sometimes I joke and I say meditation, you know, when your meditation is really good, you know, when you have a really good meditation, you have to hear yourself saying, wow, that's so great. So if you don't make sound, your meditation wasn't good enough. So in the same way, creative people should say often, wow, that is great. Being amazed, you know, the ability. Some people are so, hurt, so wounded that you show them something amazing and they look like ice, you know, nothing comes up. That's because they've been very, like I mentioned earlier, so the people who have been, they haven't been, trained as a young person to dream. So their dreams have been lost, have been stolen. So yeah, creativity, double checking if my values that are the foundation for creativity are well alive and not just trying to be creative on the external level by the beauty of the product. My tennis teacher always tell me, just be aware that if you're focused on the result, you will lose the pleasure of playing. But you're focusing on the process of learning and progressing, you'll enjoy tennis until you are 90 years old, at least.
Thank you. We've got two more questions and very long. We've already overrun. So let me put them to you. In England, we've just had children sit their, well, they didn't sit their exams, but they've had results, their A-levels, their GCSEs. And it's been a bit of a fiasco, to say the least, on how to decide what grades to give them. In schools here, the majority of state schools are sidelining creative subjects that allow children to dream or experience things on another level. And so the question that's being put is, how can we change this as a society? So that's one question. And the other question is, what are your favorite, what are your favorite biographies that have inspired you? So those are the two questions. Favorite biographies?
Oh, okay.
That have inspired you.
All right. Well, the favorite biography that inspired me was Billie Holiday, this jazz singer. And with their counterpart of Ray Charles, you can see the movie Rays. To me, that's been very inspiring because they started from really, really, how to say in English, all the strikes were down. You know, they couldn't be in a worst position to succeed. And it's only because of their own dreams, where Billie Holiday had the dream and Ray Charles was given the dream because he turned blind, and it's a mother who helped him to see a future for himself. So I always found those two biographies to be extremely powerful for me. They've been my models for a long time. And in terms of changing the system, I'm not sure I understood fully the question, because this is almost an academic lesson as well, all right? It's a very technical, but the Brahma Kumaris have tried a lot of things, you know, to help the whole process of learning. There's a program called Living Values that have been used for a long time. I presented it at the Minister of Education in Edmonton, in Alberta, in Canada. We do have quite a few books or kind of little tools that are provided for parents, for children, to try to cope with, you know, the challenges that we have at the moment, where trying to be creative sometimes is creating a new pressure on the children, which is actually the dangerous side effect of being creative, is, you know, we sometimes say, don't compare, because you're going to start to compete, and then you end up complaining. So we always say, these are the three bad vitamin C, you know, don't compare, because you'll compete and then you'll complain. So the danger in creativity is letting people start to see if they're more creative than another. That's not good. Instead, we say, well, you should find another way of, you know, connecting with your own inner self and learn how to really know who you are. And I think the, you know, spiritual journey is all about allowing people to see what's inside of them, what's really already there. And our contribution to society is allowing people to find their own dreams in a way, but also find their own capacities. It's not just a dream concept. It's my capacity. What's really my potential as a human being? For me, when I took the first class in Raja Yoga, that was my big thing, was yes, I knew the brain could perform better, but I didn't know how. And what I learned, you know, through meditation and through philosophy was, yeah, your brain can expand a lot, but it starts from the awareness of who you are as a soul. And that was the ingredient that was missing. So I don't know about the whole system, to answer fully the question. It's a skill, you know, some people work in those ministries. But on a spiritual level, I think by giving people the chance to rediscover themselves differently is a big, big contribution. And I see what we have taught in Brahma Kumaris. I see so many people who came to the center. They didn't become Brahma Kumaris at all. And we, of course, don't expect anyone to do that. But they took a lot of material from the teachings. And I see how they're using it in schools, in education for adults, in parenting skills. Quite interesting. But I'm not sure I'm answering fully that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric, for making the time and joining us from Canada.
Anyone, thank you.